Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish. This podcast coincides with Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Our conversation today will focus on different aspects of the topic of fertility and infertility. I'm delighted to introduce to you my guest, Rabbi Miriam Berger, the senior rabbi of Finchley Reform Synagogue and the founder of the Wellspring Project, formerly known as the Mikwa Project UK.
In light of the highest population, to be precise, 7.753 billion people on the planet at the moment, shouldn't fertility be seen as a positive condition? What do you think?
I think that people can only hear that question as really almost offensive. If we were talking about people with issues with digestion and eating, we wouldn't say to them, well, you know, the meat industry is a real blight on the environment, and maybe this is a blessing. So I think we definitely can't go down that route as kind of infertility being seen as a positive condition. If it's somebody else's condition. But I think that it's more than possible for people to see the cards that that they've been dealt in life, you know, their own condition, whatever's going on for them in life, and to find the positives. It's certainly what my husband and I spent a long time looking for when we were unable to have more children after our first. And we're able to look at this as, what couldn't we do with a young baby at this point? And it meant that we started going on very lovely holidays and traveling more and being able to say, let's really embrace life as it is, rather than kind of struggling to find life as we would want it to be. I know that's really a much, much easier thing to say when it's a second or third pregnancy infertility, and not when people are unable to have their first child. I think that the struggle for people of seeing other people open chapters in their lives and desperately wanting to open that chapter and not being able to can be devastating for people. And we see it at every life stage, you know, how difficult it is when you feel all your friends have got married and moved, you know, into a different social scene and that you're feeling left behind. It was really one of the motivations for creating the Wellspring Project, this moment of mikveh, of being able to say, not, you know, oh, I see my infertility as a real positive, but actually being able to say, how can I make myself find the positives of life as it is, and how can I be challenged to address life as it is rather than as I want it to be? And so I don't think we can look at infertility as a positive, but I think that we can certainly help people to see the positives in their own life, whatever that looks like.
That's really heartwarming to hear you opening up about your own personal experience. And it's always good for people to know, for us to know, how we can turn very negative experiences in our life into something positive and to make the best out of our very limited life on this planet. But then would you say, or would you comment on how much you think public money should go into helping people to conceive? Because speaking from a personal experience, as you said, regardless of, you know, how many people live on the planet, it's always a personal trauma, a personal experience when people cannot have experiences which other people can. Or do you think adopting would be a better route?
So it's really hard, and I know that adoption can be the most extraordinary blessing and a gift to those children. But I also know that it's not the same as going through the process of creating one's own child. And that for a lot of people, that real kind of instinct, we're left with almost an animal-like instinct of like the need to reproduce. It can be incredibly hard for people if they are told that they're not given that opportunity when the science exists, the medical ability exists, and it then becomes the kind of the luxury of the rich. There's nothing that stops our socioeconomic kind of place in life change our fertility situation. And therefore those that can access medical help and intervention, you know, it's hard when it becomes something so associated with what you can afford. And yet I recognize that the kind of the public pot of money is not endless. And it's really something that people are having to grapple with in every moment of medical abilities. You know, how many bone marrow transplants should a patient be able to go through? How much cancer treatment? To what extent does there have to be the kind of the statistics on your side in order to favor being given the treatment? So certainly as a rabbi, I don't think that I can make a sweeping statement on this is how public funds should be spent in the area of fertility. But I do think that what I can say is it needs to be fair, that it can't be a postcode lottery. You know, it can't be about where you happen to live and what your, you know, what your medical trust makes available to you. I think there has to be equity around the country. And I've been recently led to understand the inequalities of same-sex couples and what it means, what it means for them to be accessing fertility treatment. So my understanding is that every couple has to prove that they have been trying themselves for at least a year to conceive before they're able to access public money to help them to conceive, which might sound perfectly sensible, apart from the fact that that means a heterosexual couple just need to prove that they've been having unprotected sex for a year, and yet a same-sex couple need to have been accessing their own medical route to be able to try and conceive. So, you know, I think what I would say is there needs to be fair access to public money, rather than making a statement that this is how much we should help people to be able to conceive or not.
That's a fair point. But I want to kind of shift our conversation a little bit towards the Torah, because one of the first commandments in the Torah in the first chapter, verse 28, says, Peru Urvu, be fertile and multiply. And obviously having this conversation just proves, you know, from a personal point of view, that if one can be helped conceiving, that's as a blessing. And as you made the point, it has to be fair. But is fertility always a blessing? What do you think?
I think that they're different things. I think that, you know, that statement in Torah about going forth and multiplying is about the need for kind of to continue what is important to you, to that sense of legacy, that sense of what continues after you. And I think people find their ability to do that in all sorts of ways. You know, I have extraordinary colleagues in my life who have given their blessings into the world in a way that will live on long after them, whether they go on to have children or not. That I have seen teachers who have influenced generations of people, and that we've seen people leave their legacy in the world in all sorts of ways. So I'm all for things passing, you know, from generation to generation. And that's not always the same as being able to count the number of children we have. You know, I'm often struck by a certain generation of members of the community who talk to each other in a way that sort of, you know, that bragging culture of, oh, well, I've got, you know, X number of grandchildren and Y number of great grandchildren, that sort of, you know, this shows some great success on my part, that my children, you know, found partners and happened to be fertile. And I find it kind of so offensive. You know, it gets into my kind of heart when I hear them talk like that, not because I feel, you know, is that what I've done to, you know, is that what we've done to our parents, that they can only count one child from us when, you know, my brother's got three and my sister's got two, like, does that make us less of a braggability? You know, thank God that's not where our dads, you know, what our dads feel about us. But I do think there's something about not knowing what's going on for people and not being able to just say, well, you know, it's fertility in the family that's the blessing. And you know, that's kind of, that's the end of it. I think that people's lives are really different and that we never know what's going on behind closed doors. We have a great phrase in our family where we'll often talk about either small family problems or small family perks. So, you know, we'll get out a board game and we'll see that you can't play unless you've got four players. And we'll be like, oh, well, small family problems. This is not a board game for our family because we can't play it with the three of us. And those, you know, small family perks of like, well, actually we can. You know, we're very fortunate to be able to spend money in a particular way because we've only got one child, and actually that makes certain things accessible to us that perhaps it wouldn't be if we had three children. And so I think, you know, that question of blessing, you know, is fertility a blessing, is really loaded, because do we think of blessings as coming from God? Or do we think of blessings as the way that we look out into the world? You know, my one son and our little family has turned into an absolute blessing in my life. There's all sorts of things that I wouldn't have been able to achieve or do if I'd also been managing the needs of multiple children. And who knows if we'd have managed to have a second child, what, you know, extra needs they might have had, and how our whole life might have shifted because of whatever that child was to have kind of brought into our lives or brought into the world. So, you know, in that way, is fertility a blessing? Well, it depends if we feel the blessing in our life. And if getting pregnant is a blessing and is something wonderful, then absolutely. But if we think of blessings as being something kind of bestowed on us from God, you know, it's terrible to think of, well, some people are more blessed by God than others. What have they done right that other people have done wrong? I became quite fixated in our old synagogue building just above the ark. There was the word Chaim, Etz Chaim Hi. And for years, when I was kind of going through this secret battle of infertility and, you know, my community not necessarily knowing exactly what was going on, or maybe assuming that we were trying for a second and couldn't, who knows. Every time I turned to face the ark, all I could see was this word Chaim, and in the middle of Chaim, the two letters, the two yuds of God's name. And I became fixated on this sort of, is bringing life into the world something that, you know, we need God for? Is this inability to have another child kind of God's doing? And why? What's God's plan? And it's fascinating because I don't really think of God in that way in my life, you know, intervening in the everyday. And yet I think when you're going through something like infertility, you become quite obsessed and want the answer. And wouldn't it just be so easy if God was controlling that? And, you know, what do we have to do? Pray like Hannah, be lucky like Sarah, and be visited at an older age? You know, I think we have to be careful how we use the word blessing.
That's lovely. And it's very powerful, actually, what you've said. First of all, to be more aware, or maybe to be more sensitive towards what other people are going, because we don't often know. And when it comes to blessings, to make our lives a blessings rather than to wait for those blessings to happen, because generally, you know, I call it cultural conditioning, doesn't always prepare us for things to go a certain way, or when they don't go a certain way. So does it mean that we are not as blessed? Just echoing exactly what you've said. And that's why it was such a powerful testimony, what you've said, you know, as a rabbi and as a person, to kind of to address the issues of small families, but also those people who struggle and have to find meaning for their lives in other ways of prolonging that and leaving their legacy. Just recently, in one of the Ika Synagogue events, I brought a story by Rabbi Lionel Bloom. And it was a story about one of his thought for the day, when we are compared to being the hands of God in this world. And it, again, us making the world a blessing with our hands, because God has got no hands, and that his legacy as my teachers, your teacher, I know, so many, many of our teachers who didn't have children, they left their legacies in many other ways and still live through their writings, through their thoughts in our lives. But I just will move us very quickly to another aspect of fertility, infertility, to abortions. Obviously, the recent decision by the United States Supreme Court, which overturned abortion rights, made big waves around the world and affected people in different ways, depending on one's opinion. But do you think that there are situations when fertility leads to unwanted pregnancies, and should a woman have the right to choose?
I mean, look, if there was only one way to get pregnant, if you could only get pregnant when you were in, either a happy, stable relationship or had chosen that this was the moment that you wanted to get pregnant and do this as a single parent, if you could only get pregnant when you had enough money to be able to support yourself and the life of your child, if you could only get pregnant when you knew that your maternity rights would mean that you could afford to nurture your child and also go back to a job that would sustain you at the point that it was ready for you, then maybe I might have a different response to abortion. But actually what we know is that people get pregnant in all sorts of ways, either, in horrendous, whether it's rape or incest, or just at moments in their life when they are in stable relationships but couldn't possibly entertain feeding another life or stopping working for any period of time. People do get pregnant when they're not in a relationship, and you become inextricably linked to the person that you have, you've conceived with, and that might be devastating. I think that whilst there are multiple ways of being in the world and finding that you are pregnant, there have to be multiple ways of being able to cope with that unwanted pregnancy. And whether that's abortion or going through with the pregnancy and then adoption, it has to be the decision of the pregnant woman. It has to be her ability to be able to say, I know, and I don't take it for granted, that there is a potential life that is growing inside me, but it is only a potential life. And I think that it's when people mistake that pregnancy for a life that we get into conversations that are just simply inappropriate. We all know that not every pregnancy results in a healthy baby, whether by our own choice or not. And therefore, as Jewish text gives us, the prerequisite for the life of the mother has to take priority until that baby is born and alive, and then it becomes its own separate life, and its life is as valuable as the person who gave birth to it. But I genuinely believe that until that baby is born, the life of the mother has to be put first. And that doesn't mean just when the mother's life is in danger physically because of the pregnancy, but all of the other concerns that being pregnant may bring. I just can't stress enough that the choice, the ability to decide the future has to come from the person who is pregnant and the person who helped to conceive that child.
Thank you so much, Miriam, for making this statement so clearly and powerfully. It leads me to my last question. What is the Jewish progressive response to infertility?
So I think that Torah makes infertility really hard for us, because we're given these beautiful narratives of our matriarchs who struggle with infertility, whether it's Sarah trying desperately to conceive in Genesis, or whether it's Hannah, later on in Tanakh. I think that we are given a real narrative around infertility being in some way just us needing to wait until God chooses that it's our turn. And I think that progressive Judaism has to be the voice that reminds people that the reason those stories are there is because infertility has been something that we have struggled with forever, right? 3,000 years ago, we understood that not every couple were able to have a baby just when they wanted to. And therefore, we created a narrative around how do we deal with that feeling of powerlessness that that overcomes us when we're feeling infertile. But that's really not the same as God punishing us. And that the progressive Jewish voice has to be one that says, unfortunately, infertility is something that's really natural, but it's not the same as some kind of punishment from God, and that infertility comes with a whole host of different paths that you can choose, and that as your community, we won't make that choice harder for you. So I think it's for progressive communities to kind of be mindful of the people that don't have children, that we don't access synagogue life only through our children after we get to a certain age, that conversations around how many children you have, can be unfortunate, that questions around, well, when are you going to have a baby or when are you going to have your second, can feel painful. I think that we as progressive Jews, our response has to be how we treat each other and how we're mindful of infertility as being part of life, rather than being able to in any way give a Jewish response to these are the reasons for infertility. We need to leave that to the medical professionals who will help guide one of those paths.
Rabbi Miriam Berger, thank you so much for coming to the Progressively Jewish podcast.
Lovely to chat to you.
This podcast was presented by me, Rabbi Tanya Sachnovich, and I would like to thank again Rabbi Miriam Berger for speaking so openly and passionately on our podcast today. If you would like to know more about the Wellspring Project, please go to its website, www.wellspringuk.org. I would also like to thank Reform Judaism, Liberal Judaism, and Leoberg College for supporting Progressively Jewish. Please share your thoughts with us on the Progressively Jewish Facebook page or by emailing us at progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. Our next episode will come out at the end of July, at the beginning of the months of Av, and will be led by Rabbi Richard Jacobi.